Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're starting the show by taking a look at phenology and a phenology calendar with Stan Temple. Stan's a professor emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. He studies how the change in season affects cycles for plants, animals, insects, all kinds of things. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you can give us your notes about the cycles of nature around you. Have you paid attention to birds, other wildlife, tracking their behavior over the course of a year? Have you heard of phenology before? You can join in with your questions. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Stan Temple, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's good to be here.
Phenology, it has a long history, doesn't it?
I suspect human beings have been keeping track of seasonal events since we became humans. It was so important to our survival to make sure that we understood when things were going to happen each year so that we could prepare ahead.
Yeah.
So, yes, it has a long history and going all the way back, at least in recorded times, to Aristotle.
And some deep history, and I'm thinking in relation to Wisconsin, but certainly elsewhere, deep roots in agriculture. Phenology and farming practices, for example.
Sure. Everyone who plants something is aware of growing seasons and when they begin and when they end. So you're right. And there are cultural events, too. The blooming of cherry trees in Japan has an almost 1,200-year record of when that significant event in their culture happened.
You know, you and I have been doing this program for 12 years now, and we talk about the Aldo Leopold Foundation's phenology calendar, and we're going to talk about it again today. It's a dandy for 2024, but how's it different?
Well, the calendar for 2024 does a number of things that we haven't been able to do in the past. 2024 is the 75th anniversary of Leopold's seminal work, A Sand County Almanac. So in preparation for that sort of big occasion, we've done a number of things that relate to the calendar. Last year, we started a volunteer project to have people transcribe Aldo Leopold's handwritten journal notes from the shack. These were the basis for the essays in the first half of A Sand County Almanac and featured a lot of phenology. So we had about 70 volunteers who went through over 1,000 pages of Leopold's handwritten notes and transcribed them so that they can be searched and easily read. The other thing that is significant is that things have changed a lot since Leopold made those journal entries. So this year, in the calendar, we always have a theme. You'll recall every year there's a theme to the calendar, and I write some informative information about the theme. But this year it's comparing what did Aldo observe and comparing that to what we're seeing today. And it is shocking to see how seasonal events have changed since Aldo Leopold's time.
So can you give us some examples?
Yeah, I can sort of go through the year with some things that have really shifted so dramatically. And, you know, there are some of us who've been alive long enough, Larry, to have seen these shifts happen in our lifetime.
You and I.
But right now, the Leopold Foundation is in the midst of hosting hundreds of people to come up and watch sandhill cranes congregating for migration on the Wisconsin River. Aldo Leopold, in his day, saw the last cranes depart on November 17th.
Wow.
Now, the average departure is January 29th.
Oh, 2 months.
Some people will remember that one of the essays in the Sand County Almanac for the month of March is The Geese Return. Aldo Leopold saw geese returning on average on March 22nd. Perfect event for his March essay. Now, geese are arriving on January 25th. So again, in another essay, Leopold talked about the right to see a pasque flower as an inalienable right. Well, pasque flowers back in Leopold's time on average bloomed on April 19th, now March 24th. So you can go through, you know, the one that always struck me was the compass plant, which was the subject of his essay for July. And it was the perfect essay. You may remember the essay. He talks about this compass plant that was hanging on in the corner of a graveyard up on Highway 12, just north of Sauk City. And he said, you know, over his period, it on average bloomed July 15th, right in the middle of the month. So it was the perfect candidate. Now compass plants are blooming on average June 5th.
No. More than a month earlier.
Yeah. And for some people, you know, the departure of birds is significant. Eastern phoebes often nest on people's houses and and barns. Back in Aldo's time, the last phoebes were seen on October 14th. Now we're seeing the last phoebes November 5th. So, you know, for various plants and animals, we're anywhere from several weeks to a couple of months earlier than when it was happening in Aldo's time. And that's all due, of course, to climate change, that things have changed dramatically.
Jude in Iola has a question that relates exactly to this.
Okay.
And so, Jude, go ahead.
Yes, I just want to know why I'm seeing geese in the area, why they haven't migrated outside of central Wisconsin. I've been seeing them constantly.
Well, Canada geese are kind of an interesting species when it comes to recording phenology, because we have now two populations of Canada geese in Wisconsin. We've got the resident Canada geese, the giant Canada geese, as they're called, that live here all year round. We also have lots of geese coming out of Canada, out of the Arctic, especially the Hudson Bay region, that migrate through in the spring and the fall. And it's getting kind of difficult to tell the difference between the migrants and the residents. So what you're seeing now are probably, if you haven't seen them leaving, they're probably flocks of resident Canada geese that have decided your neighborhood is a good place to fatten up for the winter.
Yeah, there you go, Jude. In thinking about that, I remember from my hunting days back when I was 16, 17, 18 years old, it was quite a sight to see what they called a giant Canada goose.
Mm-hmm. Giant Canada geese, actually, you know, they were proposed for listing on the Endangered Species Act in 1973. And so they've made a dramatic recovery here in the upper Midwest.
Carol in, and Jude, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Carol in Milton, Wisconsin, called, couldn't stay with us. She's wondering if they're going to put the leap year in there this year. They forgot in 2020, and she and her husband kept a calendar because they'd never seen one that forgot.
Yeah, that was an embarrassing year for us, but we got it covered this year, or next year.
Got it covered for next year. You can join in, too, with your own questions or comments as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. One thing that hasn't changed, in my mind anyway, are the photos that grace the calendar. And I'm looking again this year. They're just some dandy wildlife photos, one for each month.
Yeah. Emily Oyos, who's our person at the Leopold Foundation, who helps organize the photographers, is having an easier and easier job of this, because appearing on the phenology calendar has now become kind of a plum in nature photographers' cap.
Yeah.
Because the calendar now, you know, it's just expanding year after year. So we sell thousands of copies of these things now. So if you're a nature photographer, it's a good way to get your material out and to get your name out there. But the photographs absolutely there are spectacular. And unlike a lot of calendars that are sort of focused on a particular group, flowers or birds or something, we really mix it up. We try to have a diversity of images. So it's everything from plants and amphibians and reptiles and birds and mammals and even occasionally a non-living event.
Well, they're always striking, and I look forward. You know, I've got that Phenology calendar in my office, and I look forward to turning the page every month. And I will have, you know, I snuck a look at all of them before I put the calendar up, but it's always a nice surprise to see that new photo before I then look at what else is on the page.
Well, of course, the Phenology calendar, in addition to being beautiful, it helps you anticipate what is coming up in the natural world. So the dates that we put on the calendar itself are the earliest dates that you can expect in South Central Wisconsin to see this event or encounter this event. So if for those who aren't phenologists and aren't sort of putting all this stuff into their memory banks, it gives you a way of knowing ahead of time when you can expect to see a past flower bloom or see your favorite plant bloom or your favorite bird arrive or depart.
And if you live in the northern part of the state, you can apply Hopkins Law. And I've just got to mention Andrew Hopkins was the chair of the Department of UW Department of Agricultural Journalism. My home department, it's called Life Sciences Communication, but he chaired that department from 1913 to 1951.
Interesting.
38 years.
Yeah. 38 years as a chair. That's tenacity.
That's tenacity for sure.
But he mentioned earlier the agricultural connection to phenology, and it was very important to be able to come up with a way of extrapolating observations of the timing of various crops across latitude and longitude. And that sort of biogeographical rule has helped quite a bit for people who buy the calendar and who may be living north or south or east or west of South Central Wisconsin to be able to use his little algorithm to predict how the dates will differ between northern Wisconsin, say, and southern Wisconsin.
And you've got that right in the front.
And we do. We put it right in there because a lot of people do find that handy. And I suppose they mark up their calendars accordingly.
Pete in Mequonigo emailed us. He's not seen the usual red-breasted nuthatches that have been faithful visitors to his yard in Mequonigo for the past few years. Wonders could the wildfires in Canada have had some effect on their numbers, although he's lost two old-growth oaks, and perhaps that's where they were hunkering down.
Yeah, I think he may be right on both accounts. Yeah, red-breasted nuthatches, of course, are birds of the boreal forest, and a lot of catastrophic changes took place. But more than that, red-breasted nuthatches are not as regular as other migratory birds in how far south they come and when they come. So this presumably is an off year for them, maybe because of the things that happened to their habitat up north, but also just because of the weather conditions look what's happened over the last, you know, few months. We've set records for warm temperatures and south winds. And if you're a bird wanting to go south, you migrate when you've got a north tailwind.
Yeah.
And for a lot of our migratory birds coming from the north, things have been delayed this year because of that unusual span of weather that we had in October and November.
Stan Temple, our guest today, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison, Senior Fellow in the Aldo Leopold Foundation. The foundation has its phenology calendar out. You're going to be able to get one, and we'll tell you how to do that in a minute or two. But first, I want to remind you that Trina LaSousa is our engineer and Clara Neipert's our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking phenology and the 2024 phenology calendar that features, among other things, tidbits from Aldo Leopold's Shack Journal. And our guest today is the person who writes a lot of the calendar and puts it together, Stan Temple, professor emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. Questions for him, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Gene emailed us, can you recommend a resource for keeping track of the phenology categories and dates? They like to write them down, but they can't easily compare. Keeping track of phenology. Well, I think your calendar would be...
I think she needs to buy a calendar, because that's exactly what the calendar is designed to do. If she's not seen the calendar before, you know, the calendar, the body of the calendar, has a little over 100 different events that are sort of well-recognized by most people. And it tells you when you can anticipate that it's going to happen. And, of course, this year, on the sidebar, we have excerpts from Aldo Leopold's journals describing when he saw them back from 1935 to 1948 when he died.
That's really interesting. Just to kind of go along with this, Matt in Alawes, I'm not sure how it's pronounced. I can't remember. He's made his own phenologies, and the thing that interests him most is how certain sightings could make you realize that other things might be going on. One that Matt realized was that when violet leaves started to get yellow spots from dying back, that would mean that the chanterelle season was starting. He wonders if hunter-gatherers hundreds of years ago had other correlations.
Oh, he's right on to something, of course. You know, things that are easily observed can often be signals that things that maybe aren't as easily observed are about to happen. And certainly for hunter-gatherers, they would have been well aware of very obvious seasonal events, meaning that it's time to engage in some harvesting practice. And we have all kinds of folklore that sort of relates to things that people can observe that make a prediction about the changing season. Most of them have no basis in scientific fact. So groundhogs being able to predict the length of winter is no better than a coin flip. But there are other things that do pan out and actually do have a basis, because many of these phenological events are cueing off of the same environmental activity. So a change in temperature, a change in day length, a change in precipitation are all things happening in the physical environment that these plants and animals are responding to time their seasonal events.
You know, and I'm thinking as you were talking, on different times during specific periods of the year, one that comes to mind is, and this applies to different areas, actually. People have said to me, well, one way to look at it, you know, experts I've had on, is when the when you see the forsythias first bloom. And it has to do, I'm not remembering what it all amounted to, but in some cases I know it was insects, in some cases it was the advent of maybe a plant disease or something. The forsythia blooming was a signal.
Something very obvious, yeah. And I think, you know, the last caller talking about finding chanterelle mushrooms, you know, in the spring, the old adage of morel mushrooms starting to appear when the oak leaves are as big as squirrels' ears.
Yes.
There's all kinds of folklore like that. Most of it you know, probably has some basis in fact, but is not nearly as good as our calendar in helping you anticipate when things will happen.
By the way, we'll mention this again, but how do people get a copy of the calendar?
Yeah, it's really easy. Go to aldoleopold.org. That's the website for the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And the advertising for the calendar is front and center. You can buy your calendar for $16.95. We'll get it to you in time for Christmas presents and things like that.
So I would not wait. There's although you sell thousands, there's probably a limit to the number that you have. So better to order early.
It is good, obviously, to order early if you're wanting to give these away for Christmas presents, which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
But we've actually gone to on-demand printing.
Oh.
Because we found that people were tardy and were really disappointed when the printing ran out. So we've gone to on-demand, so we won't run out. You're safe.
That's good to know.
And I must say, Larry, you know, over the years, we always have a significant spike in sales after I appear on your show. So thank you for that.
Well, I'm glad because it's a wonderful calendar. Tom and Nina has something for us there. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. One of the things that I use the Aldo Leopold calendar for is just keeping track of things. But I'm a fly fisherman, and us fly fishers create our hatch charts. And what they are, they're unique to certain regions of the country, and I have one that I've created and used for central Wisconsin, and that records or predicts when certain mayfly species and caddisflies and stoneflies emerge from streams, trout streams, as an aerial insect, and the trout rise to them. So us fly fishers use hatch charts as a guide to when we should be on streams for certain types of trout fishing adventures. So the phenology of the bugs in Wisconsin is extremely important to us, and I've used that equation that, Stan, you put together when I talk about the differences in emergence periods from southern Wisconsin to northern Wisconsin, and then east to west as well. So we really appreciate the work that you've done on your calendar, and that little equation we can use is very, very neat. So thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And of course, Aldo Leopold was an avid fly fisherman, and he kept his own charts. Unfortunately, he didn't include them in his phenology research. That was, for some reason, something that was separate. It's in his hunting and fishing journals rather than in his shack journals. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And of course, the timing of hatches of aquatic insects have shifted. Leopold, unfortunately, as I said, he did not record virtually no insect events, which is unfortunate. But they have shifted. The timing of those aquatic insects hatching has shifted as water temperatures have changed with climate change. And you know, it's really rather sad for trout fishermen in Wisconsin that as streams, especially in the southern part of the state, have warmed up, trout populations in a lot of streams that were productive earlier are petering out.
Tom, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Pam in the Spooner area. Pam, hi.
Hi. First off, I want to thank you, Dr. Temple, and you, Larry, for all that you've taught us about nature so that we can fully appreciate it or appreciate it more. My question is something that I've been wondering about for maybe about 5 years. It's seeming like we're seeing a lot more swans up in this area, and I don't know if it's in the southern part of the state too. But even last week, I saw two flocks in the fields, probably about 60 swans, and we see them on the small lakes around here all the time. And I don't recall seeing swans like this before. Can you comment on maybe what's happening?
Sure. It's a conservation success story. I'm guessing that some of those swans that you've seen are trumpeter swans. trumpeter swans were extirpated from Wisconsin. We didn't have any trumpeter swans for almost half a century. They've been reintroduced, and the population is thriving now. We have thousands of them. So you're starting to see trumpeter swans as a native species again to Wisconsin. The other swan that we see, especially during the fall, actually right now, this time of year, are the tundra swans that are migrating from the high Arctic, coming across the continent, stopping, especially in the Mississippi River. They actually have swan festivals over there during the fall to see all the thousands of tundra swans that congregate there. But these swans, when they leave the Mississippi River or other places in Wisconsin, are as conspicuous as Canada geese when they fly over. They're noisy, they're big white birds, and it's really quite spectacular when you see them migrating. So the birds that are in your field now will be departing pretty soon now.
Yeah. The difference, it's not always apparent, at least from a distance, to tell the difference between the two.
Now, trumpeter swans are a little larger, but if you don't have them side by side for comparison, it's tough. So you need to bring out your binoculars and spotting scope and bring out your field guide to make sure which species you're seeing. But once they're in the air flying overhead, you know, they're swans.
Who cares?
They're beautiful and very nice to listen to.
Bam, thank you so much for calling and for listening. Appreciate it very much. Greg emailed. He has the 2024 calendar. Is giving it as a Christmas gift. Wants to give it. He's been conducting salamander research in east central Wisconsin during the spring breeding season since 2019. Data collected includes the date of first appearance of several salamander species and the length of the breeding migration. In 2023, the migration season was 23 days shorter than it was in 2022. The first salamander was observed 12 days later and the last 11 days earlier than 2022.
Yeah, salamanders are an interesting case, and it's true of many other species as well, that you not only have an influence of climate, but you have an influence of weather.
Yeah.
So the emergence and the migration of salamanders to their breeding ponds is not only dependent on how the average temperature is changing in the spring, but also the spring weather. So as you've been observing them, so you know well that they migrate after the first sort of warm rain of the season. And that has much more to do with weather than it does with climate, and is highly variable from year to year.
And in fact, he notes that during the peak of the typical migration in April, there were 7 consecutive days without rain and very warm, hot temperatures. He believes these observations reflect the impact of weather on the local level.
Absolutely. He was right on.
Right
and
on.
And he's verified it just with a few years of data.
Ellie in Madison emailed us, have you thought about developing a digital calendar or app? If not, are there any digital resources you can recommend? She loves the paper calendar, but digital is easier to keep on hand, in your hand.
Well, we have thought about it. We still like the hard copy calendar that seems to be unfailingly popular with people, but there definitely are online resources that you can use. If you're a bird watcher, most bird watchers use eBird, the Cornell University's online database. And if you are participating in eBird and want to go and explore the phenology for a particular species, they have handy graphs as well as maps that will help you understand, especially for migratory birds, when they're likely to arrive and depart. The same thing is true for plants. There are a couple of online resources. There's Project Bud Burst and the National Phenological Network. Both have online resources, and especially the National Phenological Network now, getting to be very equivalent almost to eBird in terms of the wonderfully interpretive graphics that they use to show when plants are leafing out and when they're flowering. So you're right, you can go online and get really up to, really, really up to date. I mean, it's being analyzed in real time. So if you want to find out next spring, you know, where the hummingbirds are, you can go to eBird and see exactly where they are as they work their way north, and of course do that for many other species as well.
But I still like the calendar.
I think people still like the calendar on the wall.
Thanks very much. By the way, there's still a little time. You could join in. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Well, let's take a look ahead. Well, let's take a look ahead to December. What's going to happen? Well, you probably don't have the December calendar for 23, but you've got the one for 24, and there will be some close approximations from one year to the next.
Yeah, December, of course, things are shutting down.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the time when you're sort of thinking of when the last things are going to happen during the year. And there are, you know, a few things that happen during December that are, you know, maybe noticeable. Turkey vultures, for example, are a pretty conspicuous feature of the air in Wisconsin.
Yes.
And the last turkey vultures are going to leave right around Christmas time. And for them, you know, they're being scavengers. Once we get snow on the ground and carcasses, especially the leftovers from the deer season in the woods, are buried in snow, it's time for them to hightail it out of here. One of the other things, when you look at the calendar that we've done this year, perhaps more conscientiously than in the past, in response to people's reviews of earlier calendars, is we've included more of the religious and secular holidays, and we've included more significant historical environmental events. So in the month of December,
couple of them,
for example, toward the end of December back in 1973, the U.S. Congress passed the Endangered Species Act, which is a big deal for our country in terms of conservation. There's also the Clean Air Act passed in December. I think, you know, Congress put things off till the end of the year, but eventually they got it done. So yeah, even in a month when most things are shut down like December, there are still some things on the calendar that are worth noting.
Laura in Egg Harbor, your turn. Thanks for calling, Laura.
Hi. I'm just calling because I have heard the folklore around the forsythias means it's time to start fertilizing.
Ah, that's one that's come up before, Laura. Thank you.
Yeah, for gardeners, of course, there are all of these clues that they need to be doing things in their garden, and that perhaps is one that doesn't have to be highly accurate. It just has to be approximate that you get that fertilizer down before the plant really goes into a growth spurt in the spring.
Thanks, Laura. Appreciate that. Ralph in Eau Claire, we'll go to you. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, this is Ralph. This is about plants, and it isn't maybe not much to do with the cycle, but if you took a maple tree and planted it on the equator where there's no seasonal change or light change much, would that maple tree or oak tree or whatever we have in this area, would that survive there? And would it grow or not grow?
Well, probably a maple tree would need to be at the equator to thrive, would probably need to be up at higher elevations. It's certainly not going to thrive in a tropical, warm, humid environment. But, of course, at the equator, you have mountains. Mm-hmm. So as you go up the side of the mountain, you eventually get to an elevation where the seasonal changes in temperature in particular might actually allow a maple tree to exist. And of course, we do the whole the thing in reverse now. Many, many of our favorite houseplants are from tropical countries, mm-hmm. and we bring them indoors and have to, in some cases, I'm thinking of people who have Christmas cactus and so forth,
yeah.
that you've got to replicate to a certain extent the environmental cues that this plant would have been exposed to in its native country in order to get it to bloom at the yeah. right time. Yeah, so, yeah, we've moved plants and animals, unfortunately, around the world a lot, and some of them adapt very quickly. It's surprising how some species are able to shift their schedules to accommodate what the environment that we've placed them in happens to be. So, for example, house sparrows are now almost ubiquitous around the world. They're a northern hemisphere species from Europe and Asia. They're now as far south as New Zealand, and their calendar, their seasonal events, are exactly 6 months out of phase with what they would have experienced back home in Europe.
And we just learned that the growing zones have changed. We yeah. now have a 5B. We have 5A and 5B for a growing zone in Wisconsin.
Yep, that's for gardeners. That's the proof of climate change right there. And I've noticed some interesting people adapting to this change in yeah. in seasons. I noticed, for example, that Madison, Wisconsin, as they're replacing the ash trees that are about to disappear because of the emerald ash borer, they're picking a tree that had previously not really been that common this far north. They're planting sycamore trees. Sycamores used to be more of a southern species, but now with climate change, they're very sort of urban hardy trees and put up with all the problems that we create for trees in urban areas very well. And the climate in Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin, is now much more hospitable to them.
So let's get back, right? We're right at the end here. And again, I want to remind folks of how they get this calendar.
Yeah, very easy. Go to aldoleopold.org for the Aldo Leopold Foundation. The website has the advertisement for the calendar very prominently displayed for $16.95. We can get that calendar on the way to you almost immediately.
And we'll have that link too on the Larry Mueller Show page as well. ideas@wpr.org/Larry, which a lot of people know. We'll have that under our comments. Stan, always a pleasure.
Yeah, Larry.
We'll see you next year for number 13.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
Thank you. Stan Temple, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison and a Senior Fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And I've taken a look at the photos and the changes in this year's calendar, and they are really, really great. So you're going to want to... I'd phone earlier than or go online earlier than later for sure. Coming up, there's a special that is featuring Inga Wischer from Around the Farm Table, and we're going to talk with Inga and another guest as well. Next, I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.